problem is that for higher level assignments and higher level promotions, the military essentially decides what are qualifying experiences and what's a qualifying background or resume in order to serve in these billets. And the military values is combat experience. But since women are excluded from serving in these combat roles, what happens is people that could do these jobs and should do these jobs are overlooked. A good example of this is the military has decided to, a replacement for the Army Chief of Staff. And one of the names that was on the short list was General Dunwoody, who is the first female 4-star general in the military. She's at the proper rank. She's had the proper, schooling and experiences. She's got the proper time in service and time in grade. And she was just immediately passed over because they want a quote unquote a warfighter in that kind of role. Whatever she could bring to the table in terms of her own experience and her leadership is just moot because she doesn't have this check in the box of combat experience. The other problem that service members run into is that once they're out and once they've served, they're applying for veterans benefits and the claims for disabilities that are being denied just out of hand because the combat exclusion policy, since women aren't allowed to serve in combat, clearly the claim that's being filed by a woman for injury received in combat can't be a legitimate claim because women don't serve in combat. So we're seeing that women are sharing, in the sacrifices, they're performing at heroic levels. Women are winning the Silver Star and other types of high level combat awards. But they're not receiving the recognition from within the institution, and then they're not receiving the benefits that they deserve once they get out because of this exclusion policy.
How do you create that level playing field?
Well, what the commission decided was that there's two ways to go about implementing this level playing field concept. And the first is, what they refer to as training and education, which is essentially, to provide the military, so that everybody in the military understands that women can serve and they're capable of serving and they deserve to serve. And that can only go so far in terms of leveling the field because ultimately it's whoever's sitting on that promotion board or that selection committee, it's ultimately their decision. So the other route that they've realized that a possible solution is just to remove the exclusion policy altogether. And I think in practical terms, that's going to be, since the military's job is essentially to execute, that's going to be the course of action that's going to level the field.
How big of a change management issue is this? We were talking to folks earlier in the year around the gays in the military decision and the military going through some of that. In some ways, I don't know. Is this more complex? Is it's still a challenge, isn't it?
It is a challenge, but it's mostly a challenge to preconceived notions. In my own personal experience, I spent 10 years in the Marines in the infantry community. I went in as a private. I got out as a captain. And I held every leadership billet, essentially, from fire team leader all the way up to company commander. So my experience with personal experience with women serving was very limited until I had a company commanded an integrated training environment at a school where the Marine Corps teaches basic combat skills to non-infantry specialties. And half of my staff were women. I had NCOs, staff NCOs. My first sergeant was a woman. My executive officer was a woman. And we trained for, 200 or 250 women in addition to men in this company for a month. And what I found was that the women that were in my command, both as training cadre and as students, you did an outstanding job. You set a standard, you hold the members of the military accountable to that standard, and they'll perform at that standard regardless of their gender or regardless of their sexual orientation or regardless of the color of their hair or any other variables that you have. The military basically for over almost 300 years in the U.S. has trained individuals to fight and to defend this country, and that's what it does best, and it can do that regardless of any variable that the individual may have.
And is it your sense that this will eventually happen one way or the other, because guess what, we need the best people in the best places doing the work that we need? Is that the idea that, in the end, we need the best and the brightest?
That's essentially it. Looking at at, you know, where women are now, you know, compared to where they were, you know, 50 years ago when my mother was in the workplace. You know, I mean, all of the bright, brilliant, amazing leaders that the legislature has, that business have, you know, if they weren't afforded those opportunities, those glass ceilings weren't removed when they were coming up, then they wouldn't be in these positions to have the influence and the leadership that they do. I mean, I'm confident that this whole notion that women can't perform at these levels simply because of their gender or you know, their lack of strength or any sort of mental argument that they don't have the capacity to do it. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I think that women can do it and that women are doing it. They're doing it today. You know, right now there are female engagement teams and lioness teams that are serving in combat and doing their what they need to do to complete the mission. So it is. It's all about, you know, ensuring that our military fulfills its mission to defend our country by providing it with the people that are the best and the brightest to lead that defense.
Certainly one of the issues is just strength and the common sort of, I guess, stereotype that men are stronger than women. How much of an issue is that?
I like to say, you know, when I was a corporal, I was faster and stronger than my colonel, but that didn't mean I was ready to lead the battalion in combat. So it's kind of the same thing. When you study military leadership and you learn about the leadership traits and leadership principles and you read, you know, historical, stories of great leaders, you know, brute strength is never is never among that list of traits and qualities. So it plays a factor in terms of ensuring that, you know, that you're physically capable of performing in that type of environment, the arduous environment. But in terms of, you know, it being a precursor to greatness, I don't think that it is.